This one is hot and sizzling.
Get up in it, start a rub, get the watch off, I'm a roller up, big wheels, Cadillac grilled up, keep your Escort, daddy got the dealer, custom, plus them, 22s, fuck you say, what's them, third row, square tens, I let the bass hit, so they wear in, so loud, roll out, tint the windows for the hydro cloud. Big trucks, best when it's cold out. Hear me pulling up in front of your house. When I hops in, it gets the chopping. All cheap niggas, keep it knocking,
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Black Is Break, the Lion in the Ram edition. Hope y'all are doing well out there. If you didn't know, this is Chris, and I got my wife KC up in here.
What's up, everybody?
We want to thank y'all, first off, for all the feedback that we've gotten on the shows we've been putting out. It's been a lot. Been real good. We appreciate all of it. Some I have to read. We actually got one from a Stitcher comment from Kamish. Gave us 5 stars, said a very powerful and culturally enriching podcast. Black is one of my favorite podcasts, hands down. Everyone who participates in Black Is provides a plethora of knowledge and a unique perspective that keeps me intrigued, enlightened, and informed about the experiences African Americans face on a daily basis. It is a way for me to culturally connect while tending to my daily business. Keep up the great work, ladies and gents, and I shall look forward to hearing future episodes. Must listen 5-star rated podcast from the commission. Thank you very much. That means a whole lot. And we work hard over here to try to put out a great content for everybody and diverse content as well. So that's much appreciated.
Yeah, some wonderful feedback. And we appreciate all words of encouragement. You guys just don't know. Well, those of you who are podcasters do know how much work it takes to put together these shows. And so we appreciate folks listening. We super duper appreciate folks giving us feedback and just connecting with us, because it lets us know that what we're doing is definitely worthwhile and that somebody out there is actually listening. So yes, thank you so much.
You've gotten a lot of responses for your the Brown Girl Hour.
I know, that really surprised me. It's funny, I had a long conversation with Moody about it today. I didn't know how people would respond to Brown Girl Hour, because Tori and I are both quite loquacious, and we get into our groove, but it turns out that people enjoyed it. People definitely enjoy the Brown Girl Hour, which is cool. We have so much more in store coming to you guys from that particular show. It's something that Tori and I have been thinking about for a long time and just finally buckled down and did it. And so we have topics galore. And again, like I mentioned on the show, if you have any suggestions for things you want to hear us chop it up about, by all means, please send it to us.
For real, yeah, you got some on Twitter from at BGRS, and I really enjoyed this podcast. I look forward to more episodes between KC and T. At main_Shar. Ooh, I'm here for this. Can't wait to listen and report, LOL. Kai Love, it was awesome. Send the feedback in, definitely.
And I have to send an extra special shout out to Miss Kai Love. She did send us a really lovely email that was very touching and heartfelt, and yeah, the good thing is I am also a fan of her show, The Pisces Life. So look forward to seeing some shows coming up with The Pisces Life and The Brown Girl Hour coming together.
And yeah, at Lady Road 46 said, KC, this was a really good show. You and T were speaking so much truth. I enjoyed it and looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, I'm loving the feedback from the sister and online, because really that's what the overall goal of the show is to try to build this community of sisters that celebrate and support other sisters. And, you know, that's just it. Tori and I, if I can say nothing else about us, we're both two definite truth tellers. We keep it pretty real and raw. Our friendship is steeped in that. We don't believe in bullshit, and we don't believe in sugarcoating situations. We keep it pretty honest. And so I can guarantee you all that as the weeks go on, that's the type of programming we will be delivering on that show for sure.
So yeah, thanks everybody for sending in the feedback. We love it. Mm-hmm. We'll take as much as we can get. So if you wanted to hit us up, get us up on Twitter at Black Is Online, on our Facebook page, Black Is Magazine. You can email us and KC directly at KC@blackisonline.com. You can leave a voicemail, 323-455-4219. You can always find us on our homepage at blackisonline.com.
And before we wrap, let's also shout out everybody that's been listening to our other new show, The Jam. The Jam got a lot of good feedback, too. And we appreciate you guys listening and tweeting and retweeting and letting us know what you think. And that show, again, is another one that's going to be in continuous rotation. And so we just thank you for supporting everything that we've been putting out in the past and all this new programming that we're working to bring to you all. Continue to listen, continue to hang with us. We love y'all. And we appreciate you.
Yeah, I can't see what Merc has coming next.
Yes. We recording this weekend. Can't wait.
I still got Looking at the Front Door in my head.
Yeah, it's been in my head too for about a week.
All right. So we're going to hit on a couple topics today. The first one that kind of hit, and we haven't spoken about it at all, is death of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, and that actually sparked some interesting conversation online today. But first, just want to say what an amazing actor Philip Seymour Hoffman was. I can't think of a role that he did that I didn't think he did an absolutely amazing job, even if he was in a supporting role, didn't have a lead. But the ones where he did have a lead, I mean, he's somebody who could easily just steal the show. He was so masterful in his craft. But I think his death also brings another situation, you know, just brings it back to the forefront as we've dealt with so many of our brilliant stars. And that's the issue of drug addiction. Drug addiction is real. It is real and true, and it is a beast. And he was dealing with heroin, which, you know, has been around for a long time and seems to easily snuff out people's lights. And I just thought it was extremely sad that after 23 years of sobriety, he fell off the wagon and, you know, really within a year's time, cut his life short. And so, you know, really hurt by his loss to the film world. But it's interesting, today has been a lot of conversation about the fact that it seems like the New York police, NYPD, want to go after the men who peddled the drugs to him, because they have actual video surveillance of him going to the ATM and then picking up what appears to be a package from two men. And for me, that's a first. I have never heard of a situation where somebody has died of a drug overdose and the people who have sold them the drugs have been chased or you know, searched for. Right. I don't actually have a problem with that. I just hope that if we're going to do this, this is going to be a precedent, and it can't just be because he's a celebrity that this is the case. If we have people dying of overdoses, then we need to be going after whoever's dealing.
Right. That's how it should go. Feel like you have a feeling it's not. It's a high profile overdose, and
yeah,
they want to make sure, since they can find out, they have an idea of who did it. They just want to punish them for it.
Yeah, because this is the loss that people are pissed at. Mm-hmm. Like, we lose artists, but sometimes when you lose the artist, it's not that you're not pissed at it, but it's the writing's on the wall. If you're dealing with somebody who's had a long time addiction, or dealing with somebody who might pass on later in their life or whatever the case, but 46 is young and he was still working heavily. And it just seemed like the response to this has been, you know, of course, an equal amount of sadness. And let me backtrack. it's also a situation when somebody dies of quote unquote natural causes, heart attacks, strokes. I mean, I know none of that stuff is actually natural, but there's nothing that you, well, there's things you could do to prevent it, but it's not as preventable as a drug overdose. Right. And I think that's what's bugging people about Philip Seymour Hoffman's death. It's like, if he just had not done heroin that night, we'd not be having this conversation, you know, in comparison to somebody like James Gandolfini, who had a heart attack or stroke or something like right. that. And so I just think people are angry. People are angry at his death because a drug overdose is so very avoidable.
Yeah, I think people are probably still hurt by James Gandolfini. So having another great actor just come on like out of the blue.
Yeah.
Death is just hitting people kind of hard.
And the way he died, because mm-hmm. to me that was really, really sad that he died from the overdose and then was found with the syringe in his arm with 50 bags of heroin in his possession. Like, horrible, horrible. It's such a... That news can completely besmirch the reputation of a person. Like, not that now when I think of Philip Seymour Hoffman, I'm going to be thinking Philip Seymour Hoffman drug addict. No, but when I think of him... His legacy is going to always come to a close with that ending.
Right. Just like he OD, just like a lot of other, other actors.
Found with a fucking needle in his arm.
Right. I remember when it came out, it was like, oh, snap, what the hell happened? Mm-hmm. And I came home, you was like, he OD'd. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
And a needle in his, like, that is some scary shit.
Yeah.
And I even seen Russell Brand came out and was kind of calling out America's drug laws. Kind of like, this, you guys don't... try to help those who are addicted. You know, it's like once you're on the hook, you just hooked and that's it.
Yeah.
And there's no real way to try to get people off the boat.
My question is this. The two dudes who peddled him the drugs, like, what are they going to be charging them with? Is this now a second degree murder situation? Like, what are they going to be charged with?
Yeah, it should be just... distribution, but you know, of course they're gonna try to hit him with some murder.
Yeah, distribution and trafficking, because they did not make him take the drugs. Mm-mm. You know, and that's the part that's tripping me out. And they got him. Okay, so the two suspects look like it's a woman and a man. Two people arrested in connection with the drugs found in actor Philip Seymour Hoffman's apartment were released Thursday until their next court dates. Juliana Lichku and Max Rosenblum, look, for anybody who was concerned as to whether or not they were black, you ain't got to worry about that.
Was.
This is heroin, though. I don't know many black people peddling heroin. Both 22 were among four people arrested in a rave Tuesday night in which police recovered 350 small plastic bags of what is believed to be heroin. The bags of alleged heroin were branded Blacklist and Red Bull, not the same brands found in Hoffman's apartment. The police source said the Manhattan apartments where the four were picked up are part of the investigation into Hoffman's death. The four under investigation in connection with the drugs sold to Academy Award-winning actor were identified as Lichku Rosenblum, Robert Weinberg, 57, and Thomas Cushman, 48. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office Wednesday declined to prosecute Cushman because there was no evidence he had any control over the drugs. Lichku, who pleaded not guilty to a misdemeanor charge of criminal possession of a controlled substance, appeared Thursday before Manhattan Supreme Court Judge Edward McLaughlin. I could go on reading this whole article, but you can find it on CNN if you want to hear the rest. But yeah, I think this is interesting. I really think this. Like, did they do this when Whitney died? Did somebody try to find the people who was peddling to Whitney?
No, it seemed like, you know, they were already all right with Whitney being on drug. And even though she got off, she had a well-known history. Like, I didn't really know Philip Seymour Hoffman was...
Me either.
Me either. Was clean, was a person who...
Was a former addict.
Right.
Or I guess people who are addicts tell you that you're always an addict. Right. So not a former addict, just an addict.
A former user.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to get back on it, you're like, what the hell happened? Because you would think, you know, from our standpoint, it's like, seemed like everything going well.
Yeah.
There ain't really no drama in your life from what we see, but...
But it's addiction. It don't have to be anything. Well, there's usually... Well, how can... Let me not speak like I know. Sometimes people have triggers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people just have a taste for a thing. And I did read an article that said, you know, he said when he was really into it, he tried everything. He loved all of it. He did anything he could get his hands on. That's real addiction. Like, you just, you don't even care what kind of high you get as long as you get high.
Yeah, scary. But it is something that's a treatable illness for sure. I know a lot of people look at it as a flaw, and it's hard to get over it once you've been there, you know, unless you just make a complete change like he did. Nobody really knew, or you got a Robert Downey Jr. bouncing back.
Is he still addicted? Because from my understanding, Robert Downey Jr. is somebody who is a functioning addict. He ain't never not on drugs.
I don't know. I mean, the way Hollywood works, somebody's on something. He was like, oh, he decided to do heroin. You're not on the cocaine like the rest of us. You was on that H.
Yeah, well, heroin is a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Heroin is a killer. Like, if you survive heroin, you better thank your lucky stars, because heroin, from every sob story I've heard with heroin, that shit takes you out. And it is I guess I don't know how you tell when you're taking too much.
So I know you won't talk about this dude, so I'm not trying to talk about him specifically, but I just want to ask this question. Why the hell does anybody want to see fucking George Zimmerman fight anybody?
Oh, my God. I don't want to talk about this. The main reason I don't want to talk about it, because I don't want to give this motherfucker any shine. I don't care. Whoever gets in the ring with him, just beat his ass.
Well, it's already confirmed it's DMX.
Awesome.
He said the game wanted to.
Yeah, because he was talking about it. Awesome. The thing is, I low-key want to see it. I just don't want to put no money in his pocket. I have no desire to put any money in his pocket.
No, I'm trying to get it out of his pocket. I'm like, why is he trying to be a celebrity off of killing somebody? I don't care if he killed a fucking white child. I'm like, you were charged with basically manslaughter and all that. And even though you got off, I don't know any damn celebrity who's famous for trying to kill somebody.
That's the part that's killing me. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. Only in this country can you be famous for murdering somebody. And now you about to have a boxing match, a paid boxing match to help you with your current legal troubles. Like, I'm cool.
No, he got people who want to give his ass money. And, you know, I know the game was mentioned that he wanted to fight him. So, I mean, I think it's, you know, of course he's going to pick DMX, who's a little small and older and someone he got a better chance to beat.
That's fucked up. They should have let the game do it.
And I heard I supposedly came out around Trayvon Martin's birthday. And
yeah, Trayvon said, just had a birthday.
It was announced on that day. I'm like, this
disrespect.
Yeah, how about we just don't see your ass? How about you just fight somebody on the street? And nobody need to pay for that. Just you see him kick his ass, and if the report comes out that somebody kicked Zimmerman's ass on the street, cool, I'm with that.
As long as DMX is allowed to rock the brass knuckles, it's all good. I don't give a shit. Next.
Let's talk about that motorcycle cop we saw.
Oh, yeah. That was strange.
Yeah, we were riding, just riding down the street, and there was this cop who looked like he was about to, on a motorcycle, like he was about to make a left turn into the liquor bank, which is a liquor store by us.
Yeah, all our LA heads will know exactly what we're talking about.
Sean Stocker, going up Stocker.
Going up Stocker, past the mall, liquor bank to the left, IHOP to the right.
Now, he looked like he was going in, but he had his right turn signal on. So I'm like, what the fuck? So I'm in the left lane. So I'm like, all right, as soon as I see him turn to jump back in, I'm like, all right, let me slow down. You know, I could be the usual LA person and like, nah, man, you better wait there. It's my turn. And I was like, let me let you go so you can get on. And there's this truck in front of us, and he seems to be real nosy about it and just kind of peeking in, looking to see, you know, who's driving.
But no, this fool goes, he gets over in front of us and goes all the way over to the right, like he's getting ready to make a right turn now onto Santa Rosalia.
Like the far right lane. We're in the left lane.
Right. And he goes all the way. He crosses from the left turn lane to the right turn lane. But he keeps turning back around, looking over his shoulder at the car, the truck in front of us. And busts a U in front of all the traffic. because mind you, we're at a light, to come back up and rolls past our car, but then really rolls up close to the side of the truck so he could like look in their window. And that car was had tinted windows on all sides. So it was no seeing in it unless you was up on it.
Right, but you could tell it was two men of color in there.
Right.
And I thought, okay, he's going to go up to them and like come to the window and be like, put your window down, pull over.
Right.
He just drives past real slow and then cuts in front of that truck, around it, and then like basically does a big circle around that car and then leaves.
Yeah, comes up on the other side. It just really trying to be intimidating and being an ass. That's what it seemed like. But I had never seen, Chris and I both agreed, we had never seen a cop do that before. And, you know, it just makes you wonder, what is the criteria for hiring police? Like, what kind of training do they go over? Because I swear, I keep hearing all of this sensitivity training, diversity training, but it doesn't seem to stop people from acting crazy when they're in these slight positions of power.
And something about that power trip is just make you feel like I can do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah, and I'm sure this is nationwide, but cops out here truly get off on that little bit of intimidation. Mm-hmm. They do stupid shit like drive super slow when they're around you just to see what you're going to do, if you're going to slow down, if you're going to speed up. They drive past you and look in your car. They cut through traffic. They run lights. They do all kind of stuff to me that sometimes is unlawful. Like, I've never understood why it's okay for a cop to run a light if there's not an emergency.
Right.
Why is that all right?
Oh, they turn their light on
just to get to the light and then turn it back off. I've never understood why that's okay for them. But mind you, I know nothing about whatever extra special laws they have. I don't know. It's LAPD. Shit is founded on racist principles.
So since we're talking about racist, so what's going on with the story you told me about them trying to serve the soul food at the school?
Yeah, so one of our illustrious Catholic schools has decided that to celebrate Black History Month, they're going to serve fried chicken, watermelon, and cornbread.
Wow.
Because all three of those things go together, and that's what Black people usually eat for dinner to celebrate themselves.
Yeah, that sounds so damn racist.
It's a mess. It's just, you know, my response to this was that there are so many people that have a peripheral experience when it comes to Blackness. They don't have to ever walk in our shoes or consider what it's like to really be Black. Mm-hmm. So their view of it is just really on the periphery. And for them, that makes perfect sense. That's not even disrespectful. That's perfect sense. Black people obviously like Black chicken, fried chicken, watermelon, and cornbread. And so why not pull that together and celebrate their history?
That's what stereotypes tell us.
Right. As if we're the first people in the world to put together some fried chicken. First of all, I don't know anybody that doesn't like fried chicken, no matter what race you are.
Some white folk kill some fried chicken.
Every race of people damn near makes fried chicken, with the exception of a few cultures. Right. But like, you can go to Asia and get a type of fried, you can get a fried chicken cutlet.
Yeah.
You can get fried chicken. I've never seen Mexicans fried chicken in a Mexican food spot, but I do know Mexicans that know how to fry some chicken. Like,
and whenever you go to those,
that sounded racist. I'm sorry.
I forgot what they call, but they're always serving fried food at those them little festivals. I can't think of what it is. You know the ones at the competitions, and there's always like fried everything.
Oh yeah, carnivals and a food comp. Yeah, what you said. Whatever. And wasn't there a statistic at the end of the article that said Black people are one of the like smallest populations of watermelon consuming people? Won't even eat watermelon like that.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of people that eat watermelon. The strength. It ain't I don't want to eat it around white folks. It's just like, it's okay.
Yeah, a lot of us have moved away from it for the sake of the stereotype. I mean, not me. I'll eat watermelon.
I eat it.
It's in the summertime when it's hot.
As a kid, it just wasn't that popping. It's just other fruits and stuff that just taste better.
Yeah, it's not my favorite, but I will get with one. Cornbread, yeah. But that's universal. Who don't like cornbread? Well, Toria doesn't like cornbread. Okay. I just discovered that. She got banged on. Everybody was like, Toria, really? Like, how do you not like cornbread? But she's not a bread person. So right.
It's always funny. There's always black people who don't eat some stereotypical food, and everybody's like, what?
Right. Like, you can miss me with a plate of liver and onions. You can have that. Yeah, you can have that all day.
That don't sound all that appetizing.
Yeah, I don't care how good your mother makes it. I don't care what kind of gravy she smothers it in. Liver and onions, you can have.
Yeah, it's like my mama doesn't really like dressing. It's like, you don't like dressing?
Yeah, now how don't you like dressing? That's but that I'm goes saying. Back to bread. If you don't like dressing, you probably don't like cornbread. Maybe.
This school didn't get it. I mean, didn't you hear about the whole for MLK and you had that fraternity in Arizona State who was doing a little black party and they had watermelon cups. See, like, made an actual watermelon. Like,
if people don't, well, okay, they were being assholes.
Of course they weren't, just dressing the part. And
yeah, but this school had a black student union. Like, why didn't you go to them and say, hey, we want to somehow celebrate Black History Month. What suggestions do you have?
Right. Or won't you let them lead the Black History Month festivities?
Right. We want you to come up with some ideas. And I guess you, depending on how you word that, you want to make sure you don't sound ultra racist. Like, let's go to the black students and have them figure it out.
Right.
But be like, you know, we would like to do this. You know, we're not exactly sure where to start. Can you put us on the right path so that we don't announce to the world that we're going to serve you fucking fried chicken, watermelon, and cornbread? Boo.
Yeah, that's an L. Like, oh, okay.
Sorry.
Does Jesus like fried chicken?
What would Jesus do? WWJD.
Would you get some fish and bread?
Yeah. Well, can we wrap this podcast by honoring the person whose birthday is today? The show, the day that the show is actually airing?
Yeah.
None other than J. Dilla. Happy birthday, Dilla.
Oh, no doubt, man. You probably going to hear all this Dilla stuff coming from Black Is All month. So I know on the Sports Happy Hour, I'll probably be playing all Dilla music. And if I'm the one editing and putting the music together, more than likely, if it's not something specific, you'll probably hear something Dilla related in the music.
Yeah. He made so much music. It's music you don't even realize you listening to that Dilla made because he produced for so many people quietly.
Yeah, he just loved making music, and that's what he was all about. He didn't get caught up in all the fanfare and the hype and all that other bull crap. He was just an artist who liked creating his art.
Yeah, I remember the first time I knew that I was hearing Dilla without knowing that I had been hearing him all along. It was I forget one of our many radio stations that have changed call numbers and names throughout the last few years, but they were doing one of their like pump it or dump it shows and Players came on. I'll never forget where I was. I was up in View Park driving past Windsor Hills and I was like, what is this song? I turned it up like, okay, I might need to call the station because whatever this song is, I need to hear this repeatedly. Pump this. Man, and been a fan ever since. And then once I discovered he did all of this Tribe Called Quest and all these other artists, I was like, oh, who is this dude?
Yeah, I forgot how I stumbled onto him. I just heard his stuff, but I didn't know who he was. Like, I heard the Players, and I don't even think I really realized when he did the Far Side with Running and all that.
Yeah. You know, I think his contribution to music is unsurpassed. Well, I wouldn't say unsurpassed, but I do think he is one of our musical giants.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course, he's one of those artists who became more appreciated after his passing.
Of course, because as long as he was alive, there was hope of him creating that much more. Like, we didn't know what was going to be next.
Mm-hmm.
But in his death, we can appreciate everything that he did create. And again, I think what makes people love Dilla so much is that we live in a society, especially entertainment, that's all about the floss and showing out and showing off. And he just seemed to be such a quiet artist, just really focused on his work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he definitely solidified a sound. You know a Dilla beat when you hear it. I don't think they're all identical, but I do think he just puts a certain touch on it that makes you think this sounds Dilla-esque.
Yeah, the way he just picks certain joints and just cuts them up, throws them in, you just flip, and you're like, how the hell you do that?
Right. Finding samples that you're like, what? Because when I heard Players, when I heard the original for Players, I just like to have lost my mind.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, how did you hear that?
Right. And where did you dig this album up? Like, how did you even know this album existed? Like, what in the world? And Champion Sound has been in my head all week. I just been hearing him Madlib in my head all week. And you know, he's a brother as far as work is concerned is missed. But I tell you something. Detroit knows something about them producers. Mm-hmm, Detroit put out them beat makers like it's nobody's business. The good beat makers come out of the D.
Yeah, something about the soil over there in Detroit that just be breeding.
Yeah.
They just breed some good folk, some music folk.
Yeah, we got one in our camp, Jason Williams, out there braving that cold. But that boy right there makes some crazy heat too. So, yeah, he's another Dilla disciple. Descendant of Dilla. Yeah, shout out to Jay Dilla. Rest in peace. It's been a few years now, and your work is still very much appreciated. And never duplicate it.
Nope, can't.
We thank you so much for joining in with us this evening for the Lion and the Ram version of The Break. You can find us at blackisonline.com, on Twitter at blackisonline, on Facebook at Black Is Magazine. You can always call us on the hotline at 323-455-4219. And always feel comfortable emailing me personally. KC@blackisonline.com. Love y'all.
Later.
Peace.